guys, welcome to another podcast that me and John Gonzalez host on Let's Talk Cloud Networking Unscripted. So today we have a very interesting topic, and normally we don't talk about this, but I think it's an important one, and it's about cost in the cloud. How do you understand cost in the cloud? And specifically, we want to talk about cost with networking and security in the cloud. And obviously, you know, when we were doing on-prem data centers and on-prem networking security, this is something that was never top of the mind, especially for architects and people who are operating the cloud. It is something that obviously the CIOs and CFOs and decision makers, they have to think about when they are doing their budgeting, quarterly budgeting or yearly budgeting. But once you have that budget allocated, you go and buy it for 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. So when it comes to your architect teams, your operations team, you're never thinking about the cost. But the cloud model obviously is pay-as-you-go model. You don't have any CapEx. You don't buy any hardware, router, switches, power, cooling, data center. None of that is your headache. But then when people go to the cloud, the cost is another angle to your design and architecture, right? It's a very, very important thing. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions because people who are moving from on-prem to the cloud for many reasons, right, they would think of cost in a very different way. And I think today, very well, you know, I would like to welcome James Devine, who have been an AWS Black Belt for a number of years, is now with Aviatrix, to the show, as well as Saad Mirza, who have been a principal solutions architect working with Aviatrix, working with many different enterprises. And I would like to, me and John would like to get their input on how people should be thinking about cloud costs. So first of all, welcome James and Saad to the show.
Thanks, Aman.
I feel privileged to be in the company of both James and Saad at the same time.
Hi, guys. and I think I'm not going to ask now that whether they like coffee and tea, because I think I know for sure that John, you like tea, Saad like tea as well. And James, if you don't like tea, we'll make sure that you start liking tea. Right? So this is definitely a tea podcast for us.
Naman, basically, there is tea is not a word in my dictionary at all. So just a thought.
Yeah. Well, I'm a coffee guy.
Coffee guy. Okay, so John, it's still me and you then.
It's just you and me, yeah.
Yes. So yeah, this podcast, right, and thought about this, and I think we want to take a little bit different format, right? And because I think cost is a little bit topic that actually may mean different things to different people. So the way we want to do this is we want to have a role play in this podcast where John Gonzalez, you know, who is normally my host, I want him to take a role of a CIO, CFO, a decision maker who looks at the cost and whether this is the right justification for spending on a technology. And he has been in this role for 20 plus years with a major financial organization before coming here. So he is the right person to do that. So we'll ask him about his thoughts around cost in general. And then James Devine will play this role of a person who advises enterprises in terms of what does cost means in the cloud. And he has done that for many, many enterprise customers while his time at AWS, and generally is aware of all the major CSPs. So we'll ask that. And then obviously Saad will be take a role of a architect, principal architect, who is responsible for deploying cloud, especially cloud networking security in a major enterprise. So we'll look at these three different personas because things may mean differently for different people. And we want this podcast to be a learning for most of our audiences in different roles. So let's start with John. I think, John, what I would like to ask you, right, is let's say you are an enterprise customer, right, who has been in on-prem and you have made that decision of moving to the cloud. And cost is the number one, probably a major decision factor in terms of should we be moving to the cloud or not. So how do you think the CIOs, CFOs, decision makers thinks about cost when they're moving from on-prem to the cloud? And what are some of the justifications they look for in terms of their spend in the cloud?
Hey, Newman. Hi, guys. Good question, Newman. Thank you. So when I was looking at this from a customer perspective, it was multiple angles to cost, not just what it's going to cost me when I'm in the cloud. I have to get ready to move to the cloud. What does that mean? I have to get ready. I have resources that need to skill up. I have resources that I may have to incrementally recruit and expand my team. All of that is costs, right? And they're there for the lifetime of my lifetime of being in the cloud. Then I've got my on-premise cost, and coming from a large financial, my data center is not going to close down anytime soon. It's going to be there for the next decade, maybe more. We have a lot of servers, a lot of virtual machines. We're expanding with containers on-prem. None of that is going to shrink, drastically just because I move in a couple of hundred apps into the cloud. So that on-premise cost, I understand is going to remain. It may be a little less, but it's going to be basically my OPEX on-prem, my recurring cost is not going to be drastically reduced. Why am I going to the cloud? I'm going to the cloud because I can't wait 6 months, 12 months to spin up applications, to spin up servers in my data centers anymore. Everyone is going to the cloud. I don't want to get left behind. I don't want to be the business that has no agility or lacks agility, and I'm starting to lose business because my competitors now have all decided to move out to the cloud and they're there. How do I measure my costs in the cloud? That's a really difficult question because I don't know what my end state's going to be. I may know for the next 12 months how many apps I'm going to move to the cloud. I'll take a high level view from, let's say, if I'm going to AWS, of what I think that's going to cost me in terms of OPEX. It's unlikely I'm going to shrink. If anything, I'm going to expand. I don't know when I'm going to expand. I don't know how I'm going to expand. And I don't know, how many applications I'm going to expand it, and how quickly that's going to be. So really, I have very little idea of my costs of being in the cloud beyond sort of 12 months. Because I know in the next 12 months, I'm going to move 100 apps up to the cloud. I know approximately what it's going to cost me to be hosted in the cloud using native constructs, and I can have that OPEX cost on my books. Remember, nothing's going away on-prem at this stage, right? My server farm's not shrinking. My data center footprint is not shrinking at all. So I look at it as an incremental cost of going into the cloud. That's okay, because there are other benefits other than costs for going into the cloud, which we're all aware of, right? The agility, the services the CSPs are providing, the analytics, the speed at which things can, I can grow and I can shrink at, et cetera. Those are all worth just as much to me, if not more, than just my initial outlay costs.
Yeah. So what you're saying is cost is not the only factor. I mean, there's obviously, speed to market, speed to revenue, the agility that you want for your business, and obviously the existential threat that exists because your competitor may be innovating faster than you, leveraging all of the CSP services are one of the key reasons why people are moving to the cloud. One question I do have, though, is in a more of a on-prem static world, which is mature, right? Each, I would say BU, right, or line of business have their IT budget, right, that they get every year, every 6 months, every quarter, or now when you move to the cloud, in your experience, do people have clarity on what budget of cloud are they talking about? Or is still, do you think there's this learning phase where people are thinking that, what does cloud cost means? And should I be spending, $5 million allocation for my networking security in the cloud versus application modernization? How are enterprises dealing with that?
I don't think from an enterprise we have much of a clue of what that cost is going to be, in all honesty. I think we can guesstimate it. We have to have some sort of guesstimate. We have to be able to budget for something, but that budget generally falls well short. And because it's new and we haven't done it before, then quite often we'll if business want to do something and say technology hasn't budgeted for it, then the business normally finds the funding to do it because they want to do it. So generally it's not a big issue finding additional budget because someone will pay for it because there's a good reason, a good business reason, good business value for doing it.
That's great. So yeah, that actually is a good segue for moving to James, right? James have been in AWS and is very familiar with the cloud costing for other CSPs as well. So James, let's pivot to you and say, and maybe explain our audience, right? How does CSP charge for networking and security? And let's say if someone asks you whether networking in the cloud is more expensive than on-prem, what would be your response to that?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's a great follow-up question from all of the things John was talking about. Typically in an on-prem environment, your application teams or your lines of business aren't thinking about networking. You know, the networking is kind of there and provided. You've already made significant investments in on-prem infrastructure, be it Cisco, Juniper gear, millions and millions of dollars. So it's kind of a change in the mental model where the cloud is all pay-as-you-go pricing. It's not like there's, you know, you're building out a network infrastructure and having to lay out that capital expenditure. Everything's an operating expenditure for the most part in the cloud. So you actually pay for every gigabyte you use everywhere. And a lot of times customers actually find that confusing. I can't tell you how many times a customer says, like, what is this line item for 10 cents? Or what is this line item for a dollar? It's like, look, your overall bill is like $100,000. Why are you caring about $1? But you know, you do need to understand where those costs are coming from, especially as you build out your cloud environment and have hundreds or thousands of different accounts. It can become really difficult to kind of get your head around it. But the flip side of that is if you can modernize and change your mental model, now you actually have a much better sense of what each line of business is actually costing you. Mm-hmm. Whereas you're not just sharing the infrastructure. You know, you might just have a 1 gig internet connection or a few 1 gig internet connections at your data center and everything's good, but then you have no real good way to charge back or show back other than kind of splitting it up evenly.
Yeah.
And if I could just chime in, even more confusing to customers when they want to extract data from the cloud. Let's just take something simple, something regulatory like recording for financials, right? So they record, they store, but you don't know when you're going to need to replay those recordings. Are stored on an S3 bucket somewhere in the cloud. You don't know how often you want to do that. To prove a conversation. And so therefore you don't know how those costs are going to build up over time, because you just don't know what you don't know. So you have to take a punt at it, and you have, you know, if you're going to have to pull out recordings every day of the week and they start adding up into, you know, 100 gig, you know, et cetera, then those costs are just going to mount up because you pay to extract data.
Yeah. Good point, John. So James, coming back to that, so how do I, if someone asks you, how do I estimate the cost of cloud networking, right? And maybe, you know, how do I compare it with on-prem? So maybe for audience, right, let's say if I go to the cloud, obviously I know that I have to pay for compute instances. I have to pay for services that I use, like S3 or, you know, Lambda and these type of things. But can you just quickly give a snapshot of what do people end up paying for things that they use? Is it compute and, you know, data egress, charges, attachments? Maybe just summarize what do people expect or should expect to pay from a networking security perspective, and maybe some idea of how does it compare with on-prem?
Sure. So some of the things are a little easier to figure out. Like if you pick a specific instance type, it's like running a server on-prem. You can calculate that out. There's savings you can do and commit to like 1 and 3 year savings plans. Or sustained use, depending on the cloud provider. They have different mechanisms there. So in many ways, the compute can be more straightforward. But if you ask that same application team that tells you you need one server, how much bandwidth they use in a month, you'll probably get a blank stare back.
Yeah.
You know, application people, even some network people, it's hard to get your head around, like, how much traffic is coming to my website and what does that actually mean? What is a gigabyte of data? How many visits is that? What does a typical user use in terms of megabytes? It's just not something you're used to thinking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. And then in most of the cloud providers, they do charge for data egress as well, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, there's a fee. So there's a charge for every everywhere you can move data around. In the case of AWS, they just made it free within an availability zone for to use their peering. But before that, you were paying 2 cents a gigabyte. And even that, you know, you can say, yeah, it doesn't sound like much. But if you're moving around terabytes or petabytes of data at 2 pennies a gig, that can add up and impact the business. And that's where you get into architecture. And you don't want to come up with suboptimal architectures that aren't highly available, but you definitely want to make sure that you're optimizing for cost and not moving data around where it doesn't need to be. And in that case, you know, ingressing to the internet, you pay it, it's like 9 cents a gigabyte here in the US with AWS, and similar across providers, they've all kind of priced fairly similarly. That's something to look out for as well. It's typically data coming in, they don't charge for, but anytime you upload data and serve that content, that's when there's typically a fee associated per gigabyte.
Great, that's great. Thanks, Jim. This is very, very helpful. But let's move on to Saad Mirza, right? Saad, let's say you are playing the role of this principal architect who have this mandate now to deploy the cloud environments, right? And obviously you are now investigating or analyzing, you know, whether to leverage things available in the cloud and also to bring in partner products that can give you the business outcome you're looking for, right? So your job probably is, and I think this is one thing that all of us or architects have realized, that cost was never a design attribute or architectural consideration when we were in on-prem world, right? Because, you know, we already have the software hardware. We just need to sort of put together an architecture, and it was never a design pillar. Here, cost is a major design pillar, because depending on how you architect, you may be actually spending a lot more in either a suboptimal architecture, or maybe you're using a lot of egress where things can actually be confined to a certain availability zone. So from your perspective, Saad, what is the right approach, and should you be leveraging partner products and spending some money there, and how do you overall optimize the cost in the cloud in general?
Hanuman, so like you said, this is entirely different than the on-prem environment. When I used to do this thing in the on-prem environment, the cost was never a concern for me, right? So I've been designing the architecture, and without even realizing how much we actually paid for this thing or we will be paying, because this is not my role. I really don't have to worry about this thing. Now, every step of the architecture discussions, which I'm going to have with my vendors, whether it's a CSP or a third-party vendor like Aviatrix, then the first thing in my mind is cost, 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 how much this thing is going to cost me. So there could be times when I'm going to make a mistake just because of the cost. Maybe I'm not going to build an optimal architecture, what James just talked about it, just because of the cost factor. So now, if I'm going back to your questions, like how am I going to architect this thing? This thing is dependent on what constructs are available to me, which cloud I am in. For example, if I'm in CSP A, I am going to utilize whatever is available, the native cloud constructs. But most of the time, my enterprise is looking for the options, the functionality, and the features, which is not available through the native cloud providers constructs. So now I am going to utilize the third party, the networking and security, like Aviatrix at that point, because I still have to provide the same capabilities which are required to run the business applications. At the same time, I have to provide the same tooling and the operational visibility to my operations teams as well.
Yeah, very right. And I think this is where what I've seen is a lot of people who start their cloud journey, and when they go to CSPs, and sometimes, and many times actually CSPs tell, we provide everything that you need, and they start building this cloud native, cloud formation, cloud native. And then soon they realize that, you know, there are a lot of limitations in the cloud. And because obviously, especially when it comes to cloud networking and security, that's not their focus. That's not their bread and butter. What they will make money on is services and application modernization and compute. So what they realize is they will actually end up paying when there's an outage happen, or there's a security issue that happens, or maybe the audit and compliance is not able to approve a certain security posture modeling that you may have done. And I know that, John, in your case, you had to canned a lot of projects after spending 2.5 years on certain projects just because it was not done correctly, right, in terms of policy and compliance. So I think all of that things, come into play. It's not just the cost piece, but and sometimes, you know, some of the things that may look additional expense in terms of building the right architecture is actually saving you a lot of money in the back end, right? So maybe, Saad, you can maybe chime in terms of some examples that where you may have seen this in your experience, and how, for example, let's take a example of eMatrix, right? How does that help, right, in terms of overall architecture with customers?
Yeah, so Naman, so let me talk about one more aspect, which you just said, you know, a few seconds ago. Like when something happens, like the data breach or maybe the ransomware kind of activity happen. One important thing, which is a very big factor, which usually we don't even consider in normal circumstances, is the word, which is called the massive redesign. The enterprises gets into the panic mode when something like that happens. And when they recover, the first thing they think is, okay, now I have to secure my environment in such a way that this would never happen again. So what is going to happen? They are going to mandate the architects, go ahead and build the architecture around it. But since the architecture was not done right the first time, now what I have to do, I have to do a massive redesign. So, and nobody in the cloud IT field likes this word massive redesign, because what we are going to do, we are not only going to consume a lot of hours from the architects and engineers, but also putting all important projects on the back burners. So that is also a very important factor on this. Now back to your question about, okay, so what do I see, right? So there are scenarios when, I would say there are two different types of personas of, you know, customers, right? So a customer which says, okay, since I'm an architect, I'm going to look at the cost all the time. And when I'm talking to the third-party vendors like aviatrix, then I'm going to say, hey, you know what? I have my applications and they are running on expensive EC2 instances or VMs. Now you are asking me to add two more instances in all the walled gardens. This is going to add a lot more cost to my overall cloud budget, right? Then this is a time, basically, I have to realize myself that how many applications am I even running in my walled garden? So on an average, an enterprise runs somewhere around 75 to 100 applications or workloads. So if I realize the fact that this is only 2%, then this is not that big, because networking was never cheap, was never free, right? It is still the same thing at this point too. And then there is a lot of different ways I can explain it to my, you know, upper management, that we can utilize like reserved instances, which have a lot deeper discounts available from CSPs. And then there is some other types of engineers, architects, and some like decision makers available, which can say, you know what, I totally get it, because and this networking is not cheap. And at the same time, I'm looking at this thing at a different level. Why? Because I know that nobody in the world, or if I want to go and then try to build these data centers globally available, maybe 25, 30, or 50 different places, then in a minute timeframe, I cannot just get it what they can provide me in few minutes only, right? So these are two different personas, basically.
Yeah, I agree to that. I think it also depends on how mature the customer is, especially the people who are decision makers. And I've seen that, you know, the customers who just absolutely love the agility of building and spinning up data centers. And I think there's one customer who said that, you know, I have, you know, 26 VPCs in multiple availability zones across the globe, and that actually represents my data centers. And forget about cost. I can't even do that if you put, you know, give me millions and millions of dollars to get this up and running. Right? I need to do this in an agile manner across different parts of the globe. And that what's cloud provide me, and cost, don't even worry about that, right? So there are people who understands the value of agility and the speed to market. And then there is obviously other ways to look at it, right? So let's say, you know, if you know, you do cost cutting in terms of having a suboptimal architecture, then I know that there's one customer who had an outage for about two hours where their production systems were down, and they lost millions of dollars of revenue in that, right? And the reason why it happened is because they had no ability to troubleshoot. They had no visibility into it. Sometimes in CSPs work on economies of scale where their instances and infrastructure is shared by millions of customers. So you may have a noisy neighbor problem which can run into a you know, scenario where you have an outage and you can't even troubleshoot and bring this back into production. So the cost of outage, you know, is hard to evaluate, but then having a suboptimal architecture where you're not considering all of these attributes is a major factor, right? And I think this is not something that networking being foundational to most of the architecture should be compromised. And then obviously the cost and speed to revenue. And we have many customers who come to us and they may be in one cloud, let's say Azure or in AWS, and then they have a customer or end customer who may want to have their services running or business running in a different cloud. So once you have this repeatable architecture, something that you can take without having to do a massive redesign or hiring army of people, this is basically directly proportional to the speed of revenue, right? How quickly you can get more customers, regardless of where they want us to meet them, is a very important aspect of cost that should be considered. And not compromise on a architecture that allows you to get that revenue faster. But coming back to
John, just right? Newman, yeah. the there's two things I would think of to a suboptimal architecture. One thing, it may be cheap to start off with, yeah, but it's going to cost you, you know, more than double to retrofit later, and cause you more risk, because at that point you're retrofitting something that's live in production, and whenever you touch something that's live in production, there's always a risk that something else is going to go wrong. The other thing to remember, and I think I don't know whether it was Saad or yourself, Newman, that brought it up, the day two manageability, visibility, etc. It's inevitable there's going to be outages, right? Yeah. Nothing is risk-free without an outage. The critical thing is, how do you recover and how quick can you recover from an outage to minimize impact to your customers and to minimize any impact if it's revenue-based. And if it's going to take you 2 hours, 1 hour, whatever, then all of a sudden you are going to be hit and impacted negatively. If you can recover quickly within minutes by having the right architecture and the right tooling in place for day two management, in the Aviatrix platform, then your speed to recovery should be unnoticeable, especially to your customers, because that's the last people that you want to impact. And if you don't impact them, then you're not really impacting any revenue streams that you may have.
Absolutely. So, and I think this is something that's very, very important. And similar to this note, right, John, what I wanted to ask is, let's say if you are a CFO or if you are a business decision maker who is not really familiar with much of the networking security, and because that's normally what happens, right, that your keys to the kingdom or in terms of your funding gets approved by CIO, CFO, and they're not very much informed on, or it's not their job to be technical and very aware of networking security. So what are the tools available? What are the things that you would put in front of them in terms of, how does it equate to the business outcome? What is the value that it's providing, right? And how can it be measured, right? So can you share some of the things that are available out there, especially from a cloud networking security perspective?
Yeah, I think generally from a security perspective, it's easier to get funding. I just used to scare the hell out of my financial controller. And I used to put it on him. If you're not going to give me the budget for it, if something goes wrong from a security perspective, you're going to be accountable? If the answer is yes, I'll walk away. I'll close your door. If you're not going to be accountable, this is the budget I need. This is why I need it. And this is why I'm safeguarding our company and our customers. And generally, almost 10 times out of 10, you'd get it, because nobody wants to be put in a position where they said no to enhance your security, to protect your customers, to protect your business. Nobody wants to be put in that position. So security is generally easier. And you know, most people now know you've got to invest in security to protect your organization anyway. So that's easier. From a network perspective, again, people are generally naive on network, and you know, quite rightly so, they've got other things that they need to focus on. And network is generally looked at as a black art, right? They don't know what's happening. You know, they don't like talking to network engineers because network engineers talk packets, bits and bytes, etc., and nobody understands what they're saying. So that added to confusion in the conversation generally used to work, you know, in my benefit, because they didn't understand what you was talking about from a network perspective. They knew they had to have it. They knew they had to add circuits from here to there. They knew they had partner connections. They knew all of this had to be up all of the time. They knew it had to be resilient. They knew it's going to cost them. And again, you know, if there was a case where, you know, budget was tight, then we'd have to find, you know, where can we reduce sensibly? But it would never be the architecture, because I never, ever wanted to ever go back and retrofit a production architecture, because I know then it'll cause me more risk. I'd never get the downtime from the business to retrofit it. I'd have bought tons and tons of hardware and licenses, and it would be sitting in a store cupboard, you know, for months on end before I can get an availability green zone to go and install it and make it in production. So,
that's great. So, John,
not that difficult. Sorry, Newman, to have to get those budgets. If you can frame the business benefits, the risk of not doing it in the correct way.
Got it.
And I think the risks of not doing it is always the important thing. You know, benefits can be, you know, quantified, or it can be taken one way or the other. But the risk of not doing something could be more useful as a tool in your armory.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And John, do you want to talk about some of the Forrester work that was done by Evatrix in terms of how does it help a decision maker in terms of justifying the investment or just understanding the value that, especially, let's say, take an example of Evatrix cloud networking platform, right? That's how do you justify that for a business decision maker?
Yeah. So it was a really smart move by Evatrix to get Forrester to do this independent study and demonstrate and validate, after talking to customers, what the true ROI would be of using the Evatrix platform. And there's some staggering saves, staggering return on investments to be had. You know, 222% return on investments after talking to a number of customers, aggregating their benefits together. The increase in revenue from new business as a result of using the Evatrix platform, because of time to market, the speed, the security, the less time needed from hands-on skill sets that they have. The increased revenues coming from existing customers of Evatrix using the platform, because the platform's already built, it's there, and they're just building upon it. It was another area where revenues and margins were increased. You need less resources, as Forrester demonstrated, to run the Evatrix platform than what you would normally. So you could make some great efficiencies on resources, and resources, depending where they're located in the world, can be really, really expensive. So you want to make sure you're using your expensive resources on the most critical things, and, you know, not worrying about, I would say easier things like getting to, you know, supporting in cloud, where Evatrix provides a really simple, you know, user interface or automation through Terraform, and it's very easy to use. And the last piece is where revenues and profitability can be increased, where you don't have to renew infrastructure hardware on-prem and or licenses, especially if you're in an end-of-life state. Don't bother renewing that. Don't replace it. Don't buy another black box and put it on your on-prem. Move that data out to the cloud, reinvest that cost, or make that cost avoidance, reinvest it into a cloud, reinvest it onto a platform like Evatrix that makes life so much more easier fully automated, fully secure, out the box from day one.
Absolutely love it. John, thanks a lot for this summary. And I think on top of that, Aviatrix guiding principles, right, is basically perceived value should always be greater than cost. And we have a customer for life mindset, right? So these two things, along with all of the goodness that that John mentioned from a business outcome perspective, and in addition to what Saad and James highlighted, I think it's basically a must-have platform for any enterprise moving to the cloud. We are coming to almost like a 30-minute mark that we like to keep it short, most of our podcast. I would like to go back to James and Saad and one by one, try to see, you know, what would be their like key takeaway, one key takeaway that they would like or their audience to take in terms of, you know, how they should be thinking about cost, right? What is one thing that you want your audience to take away with? So James, maybe you want to start first.
Sure. Well, I think from the conversation today back between everyone, we realize that it's difficult to figure out, you know, what, how much bandwidth you're actually using or what even is bandwidth. Your application team might not know that. So coming up with a way to have some type of data or some type of number to get a sense, and there's online calculators. You can say like, I have a website with X number of users and this, that can help give you some back of the napkin calculations. But it gets really hard and becomes really abstract when you start architecting to think about the networking cost. I would say from my time at AWS, there was a lot of fear and customers were concerned about networking costs, but the vast majority of customers were spending low digit to single digit to low digit, double digit percentage point of their overall CSP bill on data transfer. So just calculate that in, assume 10%, and then use that as a back of the napkin calculation, and you're probably gonna be pretty close. I don't know if it's more than that, talk to your CSP, because there's probably you know, some other additional types of pricing options that you can have and take advantage of.
Yeah, and don't be scared of spending on networking security, because that's just foundational for everything that you do, from supporting your mission critical and crown jewel applications. So that's not something that should be compromised, as we discussed previously. Saad, what is your one key takeaway?
Cinnamon, the one key takeaway is the architecture. So everything lies under the architecture. So I would say, don't cut corners to save nickel and dime and invest on the architecture. But, and it's pretty evident, just look at the different recommendations you are getting from different CSPs, for example, GCP, AWS, and Azure. Some of them are saying, hey, shared VPC, or maybe the global VPC is the way to go. TGW is the way to go. No. Virtual WAN is the way to go, right? Mm-hmm. So even though every CSP is trying to solve the same challenges customers are having, but approaches is different. Why? Because it all depends, the recommendation is depending on what services they can provide, what functionality and feature. So I would say the one key takeaway from my side is to have a strong foundation with the right architecture at first place.
It's awesome. Great advice, James and Saad. So, John, do you have anything, or we can...
I agree with what both James and Saad have said. Architecture, to me, is always going to be close to my heart and one of the most important things. At the same time, be responsible with your finances, but invest in the future of your business, in the cloud, because if you don't, you're going to get left behind. And when you do invest, make sure you invest in getting your foundational right from day one, which is your networking and your security. And don't look at it as a loss leader, because it won't. It'll pay back dividends in the long run. And it will give you that speed, agility, all of the good things that we've talked about, not just in the single cloud, but across multi-cloud, which is what the Aviatrix platform offers.
Fantastic thoughts. Really great podcast. Very, very good insights. James, Saad, John, really appreciate it. Thanks a lot for joining in. And maybe we'll probably end up doing a couple of more podcasts on costs, because it's an important thing for people to understand. But thanks a lot for joining today. Really appreciate it.
Fantastic. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.